interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting episode BTWRLM607. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport. So get you behind the woodshed because you don't know what you missed until you make the switch and get behind the woodshed. It's pretty much that simple. We've had the answer to our problems all our lives. Or not. But I'm here to remind that. And when you find out how much of a spectator you are not, watch out. And take heed to the question of the veracity of government informant witnesses, if you can. Ex-FBI informant pleads guilty to Biden bribery claims. Alexander Smirnov has previously claimed that a Ukrainian oligarch had paid the United States president and his son $5 million each in bribes. I guess Smirnov was drinking a little bit too much of that vodka that night, I think, here. Former FBI agent Alexander Smirnov has made a plea deal with investigators and admitted to lying about U.S. President Joe Biden and his son Hunter receiving bribes from the Ukrainian owner of Burisma, according to a Thursday court filing. Smirnov was arrested in February and charged by a special counsel, which was investigating Hunter Biden with the making a false statement and creating a fictitious record in his report on the dealings of the son of the current president. The would-be informant was also accused of failing to pay taxes on over $2 million in income in 2020 through 2022. I wonder if that tax liability was the reason a compromised Smirnov became an informant, so-called. Previously, Smirnov, 43, had reported to the FBI agents that the Hunter and Joe Biden had received $5 million each from Burisma Holdings for protection, while Biden Sr. was serving as a U.S. vice president and his son had held a paid position on the firm's board. On Friday, it was reported that Smirnov had pled guilty to four charges, including tax evasion and obstruction of justice, for providing false information to the FBI. It's an interjection. When they file false information to us, isn't that obstruction of justice or something close? Keep that in the back of your pocket here just for a little bit. U.S. media outlets noted that the plea deal will likely put an end to the investigation into Hunter Biden. So there it is. Pardon power, and who is apparently an unwritten exception, allowing someone to be above the law, I guess. And a bit of immunity doesn't hurt none either. In this cat box cover-up of the ages, I would say, do it. Don't miss another extremely important detail in this. Both Joe Biden and his son have repeatedly denied Smirnov's accusation, while federal prosecutors have argued that the FBI informant claims were fabrications. Federal prosecutors argued that FBI informant's claims were fabrications. The FBI uses informants that lie. You'd think it would be an embarrassment to the FBI, but it isn't. So take note, in the land of just us injustice, you don't know someone in high places, actually low places in a debt system, the stinking abyss, the FBI informant does not get scrutinized for the lies either. And I want to have you think back on all the convictions against people where FBI informants, so-called, unchecked by a trustworthy court system, have been used to indefinitely detain or incarcerate. So think about like J6 or the Bundy's matter, or successfully prosecute that the Biden administration now neutralizes the FBI informant to stop yet another avenue of inquiry that could shed light on the organized criminal syndicate known as the United States government. And don't think the states are not part of it. They are. By the CIA World Factbook, I've referenced many a time on this broadcast, the states are designated as administrative districts of the United States. In the post-Founding Father era, Lincolnized War of Terror, now to be led by an actual Don L. Trumpo, Christian crusader for the Jewish Mafia. And another point here, as we read through that report, that notice to us, while the government branches will accept lying FBI informants, they will at the same time deny the eyewitness to crimes in their unstated quest to absolute deeply obstruct justice. And remember, as I read this, as I read this to you here, you knows him when you sees him. Always remember that. Just watch what you're being told and make an assessment. Hunter's former business partner, Devon Archer, had previously testified to the Republican-led House Oversight Committee that the outgoing president's son had previously asked his father to disrupt the investigation into Burisma. He also claimed that Joe Biden had taken the money in exchange of orchestrating the prosecutor Shokin's dismissal. And Devon Archer may have been convicted of fraud and conspiracy, but not of being a lying FBI informant. So remember that. And Joe Biden has publicly admitted to being responsible for Shokin's firing, but has denied taking bribes. So he has also denied having knowledge of his son's foreign business dealings, despite documents found on Hunter's laptop suggesting that the then vice president was repeatedly in contact with both his son and his business associates. So let's, right now, we'll just quibble over the bribe while we ignore the witness to obstruction of justice here, y'all. Why not? Because in this post-founding father era of Lincolnized War of Terror, America, it's just us injustice, soon to be the billionaire club that you ain't in. Right, George C.? And last episode, I was reporting on the grovel, kiss the ring. Well, moving from Zuck, grovel, kiss the ringberg, pays to play. What is the cost to get into the billionaire club administration's graces when you ain't in it? We're hearing more about what this takes. Zuckerberg hands Trump $1 million, and Meta has donated the money to the United States President-elect's inauguration fund in what happens to be a push for more positive relations. Meta Platforms, the owner of Faceplant and Instagram, have donated $1 million to the inauguration fund of the U.S. President-elect Donald Trump, and company spokesman has confirmed. The contribution is being seen as part of a move by Meta CEO Mark Zuck, and Zucky does, to improve his historically tense relationship with the incoming Republican. The move marks a new departure for the tech giant, which did not make any such contributions during the previous two U.S. presidencies. In an attempt to repair the relationship and to position himself more closely to the incoming Trump administration, Zuck has publicly praised the president-elect's badass reaction to an attempted assassination at a Pennsylvania rally in July. Zuckerberg also called Trump this summer to apologize for incorrectly labeling photos of him with a fact check. Trump and Zuckerberg had dinner at the Mar-a-Lago resort last week. In a recent press call, Meta's president of global affairs, Nick Clegg, said Zuckerberg wanted to take an active role in the U.S. administration's tech policy decisions. And listen to the last episode about what old Mr. Clegg actually said about how they overachieved on their misinformation censorship. Important information right there, too, as well. The CEO intends to engage the debate around maintaining America's leadership in technology, especially regarding artificial intelligence, Clegg said. So who says Trump can't be bought, folks, here, as groveling and paying so that Meta's also can move into doing re-education era in the cyber gulag as Meta expands a controversial re-education program for first-time rule violators, raising questions about vague policies and punitive enforcement tactics. In my mind, it raises a whole lot more than that, but we'll just go with the story. Like law enforcement in some repressive virtual regimes, Meta is introducing the concept of re-education of citizens, parenthetically users, as an alternative to eventually sending them to jail, in quotes, imposing account restrictions. But this is only applies to the first-time offenders, that is, those who have violated Meta's community standards for the first time, and if that violation is not considered to be most severe. The community standards now apply across Meta's platforms, Faceplant and Instagram, Messenger threads, and while the new rule means that instead of collecting a strike for the first policy violation, users who go through, quote, an educational program, close quote, can have it deleted. There's a probation. Those who receive I did say this was a cyber gulag, right? There's a probation. Those who receive no strike for a year after that will again be eligible to participate in the remove your warnings course. This applies to Faceplant profiles, pages, and Instagram profiles. Meta first introduced the option for creators last summer and is now expanding it to everyone in announcing the change of the policy. The tech giant refers to research that showed most of those violating its rules for the first time, quote, may not be aware they are doing so, close quote. Why would that be a question, and how vague all that stuff really is, and the lack of actual appeals when you start to ask them real tough questions about how they can possibly make the right decision that way. And in particular, we've done that behind the woodshed, and they cannot answer. And a couple of times when Grimner was here, he actually confronted them and just made the flat-out statement, this was not wrong. That was enough. It was a very interesting interaction. So when you catch them, and it's clear, they've used that before to get other people, and they've never been clear about that either. And so this is now moving along. I guess it's like you pay $1 million, I guess a chump change, and you get to be a chump. Here we see the very right coming out of the gate with this. And this is where the short education program comes in as a way to reduce the risk of receiving that first strike. And Meta says the program is designated to help, quote, better explain its policy. A lot to discuss in all that. I won't. Just understand that the cyber gulag is who runs that particular jail. And I think by hearing that, you understand that maybe you shouldn't be on those platforms. I don't know about you. I guess you have a choice, and you could choose to be there. But maybe you should try and help and support RLM, Real Liberty Media, as we attempt to move this thing outside of all that, all at all. Because ultimately it just works on what's in your file, what's in it is maybe a wallet, isn't it? This information is tokenized, isn't it? Anyway, whatever you want to describe it, it's in your possession and your control. So we're trying to make that work out. So there's not going to be any of these problems, it seems to me. And not to be outdone, though, in the billionaire grovel, pay-to-play, kiss-the-ring, techno-swap Hunger Games, Jeff Bezos, Amazon, is to donate $1 million to Trump now. The inauguration fund contribution matches that of the Mark Zuckerberg's Meta. Both gestures were seen as an attempt to atone for donating over $400 million to the Democrats and to various institutions of a majority Democrat areas. So not only can Trump be bought, but he's a cheap date, isn't he? Bezos, in donating through Amazon, a source told the Wall Street Journal on Thursday, because he's not touching it directly, right? This is the same thing that Zuckerberg did. He's not touching it directly. So notice how this works. The U.S. online giant Amazon has confirmed it will donate $1 million to President-elect Donald Trump's inaugural fund and stream the ceremony as well, in what has been widely interpreted as a peace offering by CEO Jeff Bezos. The one upmanship going on here. Fascinating to watch it. The Washington Post, owned by Bezos since 2013, has been one of Trump's most vocal critics since his first term in the White House. In addition to the direct donation of the inaugural fund, the Amazon Prime Video will stream Trump's inauguration in in-kind contribution valued about $1 million. That opened up a couple doors there, I think, for some of my creative listeners. Bezos' net worth has been estimated at about $250 billion, so the amount of the donations is largely symbolic. Bezos is also supposed to visit Trump at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida next week. That's right. Grovel, grovel, kiss the ring is symbolic, too. And that was quick, and talk about re-education. Also from last week, when everything was as clear as mud, and this condition has very big geopolitical ramifications and will likely be a springboard to Iran. This report was for public consumption that I'm going to touch on. Now, again, I say these things to have you look at them in that way. If you don't think so, that's fair enough. This is the way I look at it, and I want you to see what the messaging is for the populations that are out there. But this sounds like this was a done deal, this thing in Syria, and why it went so quickly. And it was deemed a coup, but now you want to tell me, how is it a coup when it was terrorists and maybe invaders from the outside from Turkey that makes this some sort of an internal coup? It makes no sense to me. But that's how they're framing it. Jihadists claim they've taken power in Syria. Islamists have entered Damascus and declared it free, adding that President Bashar Assad has fled the capital. The word free here is in quotes in this article. Jihadists and the other anti-government militias entered and reportedly took control of the Syrian capital, Damascus, on Saturday. Citing two senior army officers, Assad, who ruled the Middle Eastern country for almost a quarter of a century, flew out of Damascus on Saturday evening, quote, for an unknown destination. And hours earlier, the jihadists announced that they had gained full control over the key city of Homs after only a day of fighting. Syrian Prime Minister Mohammed al-Jalali has offered to cooperate, quote, with any leadership chosen by the people, adding that he remains in his home. A bloodless coup relative to the government officials and no military protection is what you start to see in this. And I know this is a little bit older. I mean, the news goes fast, but I just couldn't make heads or tails what was coming before the last broadcast. More comes to bear. Very interesting what's going on and what went on and what continues not to be said as well. But it went pretty quickly. And so obviously there's questions. How did Bashar Assad fight all this time? And then all of a sudden just not able to. Well, there's a lot of dynamics in Syria. And, at any rate, we'll read on here. HTS, a group led by a former Al-CIA Duh commander and previously known as Jabhat al-Nusra, launched a surprise offensive from the opposition-held province in Idlib in northern Syria just last week. And as I'm reading these paragraphs, if anybody's done any study, you already know there's been a lot of adjustments to what they were saying in this as well. They talk about fighting. This is the clear as mud part. At the time, there was no real reports of any fighting. And so there was a lot of problems within this, and they launched a surprise offensive. I won't go through all the details, but it's important that we understand how this came about and what we might be looking, because ultimately we're looking at the United States military and the coffers of the Treasury of the United States and the compromised U.S. Knesset in Washington making decisions based on all this and who the players are and might be and what we can anticipate into the future, what's going to be happening. The surprise was actually not a surprise to at least Iran, and then by their advice to Bashar Assad, to him. So there's very interesting things going on. So, but did you get the admission that the dreaded is us, Al-CIA, duh, is who peacefully freed Syria from Assad? Wasn't the U.S. supposed to be fighting terrorism? If so, it looks like this U.S. lost the war against terrorism in Syria, too. And that's what the war against terror and 9/11 was all about, right? The U.S. war of terror used to take all your rights, the one that they did that with. Remember those? Remember all those rights you remember they took? Or is it the better truth that the LCIA, duh, HTS today, is the ruse you've been told behind a woodshed and the American people have been played for the deaf, dumb, and blind fools, the protocol says you is. Jihadists' forces, particularly those receiving military assistance from abroad, have emerged as dominant players among the opposition. Again, just say Al-CIA, duh. It's just a translation is all that we have here. Is us, Israel, U.S., is supporting, is the creation of all of that and the support. Remember, all the militia people getting wounded, going directly into Israel for health care, wound care, and then, well, probably coming back out to go do their fighting. So, who do you think that the outside assistance from abroad was here? The fairy princess, when we hear about all that? Certainly, Al-CIA, duh, is the United States with assistance from its Western allies. And the question now is, does the U.S.-branded moderate terrorists continue to feed from Uncle Sam's bloodstained hands or turn to bite the hand that feed it? And we'll have to see how that works out. And this is almost looking a bit like what it could be what happened, as I've described, Hamas did. But we'll see still. There's still this very multi-level game, level game going on in all this. And so it's hard to say what's up with it. I'm real concerned because this is going quickly in the direction that we're dealing again with stupid people that like shiny red buttons. And I don't know yet that I'm comfortable watching that come along, especially when it was predictable and predicted and told to us. Syria is that other one other country that was in the list of countries that Satan Yehu wanted to take out and got the United States to do so. And who is next? And that's where we start to focus. So that report's title said the jihadists take over. And I would say that's correct. It was all set up to take over, and why the military wasn't actually fighting. And yes, there was some fighting going on, and yes, the Russians initially started bombing, but everybody pulled back. And there's a reason why that, and we didn't hear that for days later. But there's three important points that explain the unusual situation. And another link here from the Middle East Spectator. He's a spectator, I guess, from the Middle East. Can't be free that way, though. But just as I thought, as he said, this was an organized coup triggered when HTS entered Aleppo. This is him talking now. Now, I don't necessarily feel this is a coup when it's an invasion literally from the outside coming in. However, that aside, doesn't matter. Assad gets ousted, but there's points here to look at as the anomalies were coming in. He says from some posts, Ali Larijani reportedly offered him a set of conditions 2 weeks ago in Damascus, but Bashar didn't agree with them. And this sets up this interesting condition that Bashar was saying no just a week before. He starts to have to say, make reconsiderations. And then we go on to another one here that is really showing something else. But Russia and the UAE had managed to convince Bashar Assad to step down. So there was nothing we could do, says an Iranian official. And so you see there's an behind the scenes, they're really doing a lot of discussion here. After HTS entered western Aleppo, Iran expected Assad to ask for military assistance, and we were fully prepared to oblige the troops and whatever else was needed, but no such request came. After Aleppo fell, it became clear that Assad had no real intentions of staying in power. So a very interesting set of dynamics. Remember, this guy was held off the United States. He had some very interesting things to say about the United States. And I think people should listen to what the gentleman had to say. Even so, being helped by Russia, he didn't fold at all. And then at the end, he almost looks like he has to. Well, what are the noticeable consequences of this takeover? They were taken over, but they weren't taken over they were taken over as management of the government. They weren't taken over like we were hearing, that there was dogged fight, drag-out fight. No, that didn't really happen. But what's the noticeable consequences? Nobody actually knows. And this becomes a very big question, generally, what's going to happen in that area. Syria was a very big plug to Israel, a big stopper to all that. And so we'll see as this moves along. Hamas applauds Syrian revolution. Now watch how the dynamics work in all of this. HTS is so-called moderate rebels, counter to Assad. Since Assad was helping the Hamas and Hezbollah and the Palestinians, you see that Hamas applauds Syrian revolution. The Palestinian armed group has said it respects the political choice and will of the people. In a statement shared on the Palestinian militant group's Telegram channel, Hamas called on Syrians to unite their ranks, further national cohesion, and rise above the pains of the past. Now look at what they're attempting to do here. Understand, nobody knows what's going to go on. And so this is a very interesting watch. Grovel seems to be a certain positioning here that's in the world. And now we've got to make a new bed, apparently. We congratulate the brotherly Syrian people on their success in achieving their aspirations for freedom and justice. Well, if that's the case, who is Hamas? Because most of these folks came out of Turkey, reinforced those that were in the town to come invade, and then they really didn't make an invasion. They essentially just walked in. And Bashar Assad will, I hope I got this part where he says in one of these, he has said to his prime minister, give a peace, hand it over peacefully. And he does. That's not fighting. So freedom and justice is determined by the Syrian people is not what I'm seeing, not even after the fact. In a separate statement, Saeed al-Nakhala, the head of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, an ally of Hamas, echoed the sentiment and said these groups hopes that the Syria will remain a supporter of the Palestinian people and their cause. So we see hopes and remains in this statement is not a good sign. Nothing is known right now about it. But even Russia, commenting on the recent developments in Syria, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said on Monday they came as a surprise to the world, including Russia. Peskov noted that it will take time before Moscow can engage in, quote, serious conversations with those who hold power. Except, or because, it's understood the jihadists said to have been terrorist enemies offshoots of those attacking America committing 9/11 are supported and backed by the U.S., Israel is us together, Turkey, with Satan Yehu and the United States government taking credit. Now in charge, this group is now in charge with this support, that any support for Palestine is running on hopium. And you hear that in the Hamas statement. We hope. You remain not encouraging for those folks. And I'm not saying it's all done and said for, but it's going to become very, very difficult to reorganize a lot of things over there. And NATO allied Turkey and self-interested Erdogan was calling for Syrians to determine their fate, in my view, is a highly cynical and disingenuous. As I saw, he came right out and said, I hope want the people to decide for themselves. Well, the people didn't decide anything. Right now, the people are fighting amongst themselves. And a lot of the people that were Christians and what they're called the Saudists and the Alawites, they're all being killed. Blood is flowing in the streets, as I'm understanding and looking around now for different information. So the Syrian people haven't decided yet anything, but this is what the propaganda speaks to. And for context on how this rolled out, after negotiating with a number of participants of the conflict, Assad ultimately decided to step down and left the country, calling for a peaceful transfer of power, according to the Russian Foreign Ministry. So Russia says it was not part of those negotiations. Satan Yehu did not directly make the decision. And this was solely and directly Assad's decision to resign and turn over government functions to immediately morph terrorists into the mere political opposition forces that you watch in the text. But Russia, not being involved with the decision, it nevertheless was in constant contact with opposition forces as well. And reported at that time that the Russian Federation is in contact with all factions of the Syrian opposition. So it's not like this is really coming out of the blue, although maybe certain people didn't get certain information. And I think maybe a little bird with a Russian accent, though not in direct negotiations with the opposition, spoke to Assad's own ear nicked, if you will please, to help persuade a "we'll crush the terrorists" a week earlier reluctant Assad to reconsider what he had said the week before, that after resigning and turning government affairs for the peaceful transition to his prime minister, Mohammad Ghazi Jalali, Assad likely avoiding the barbaric Gaddafi and summary Saddam Hussein injustice treatment. Both Assad and his family, it's reported, have since been granted asylum and are currently in Moscow, the Kremlin has confirmed, noting that the former Syrian leader was personally invited to the country by Russia, President Vladimir Putin, on what they're saying is humanitarian reasons. So calling for a peaceful transition and that happening, stopping a lot of bloodshed, isn't Assad here a Nobel Peace Prize candidate? Or is the Nobel Peace Prize only reserved for drone kings like Obama that extrajudicially killed their own citizens, like allowed through the Israeli cannibal directive, and then to only some terrorists that are otherwise 9/11 linked and the mutated U.S. or IS-US supported proxy terrorist jihadists? What's the Peace Prize going to this year regarding this situation? And I start to think more about Assad. He really must have had to really deeply think about this. I don't know if he figured out all the bloodshed that would be spent after, but at some point there was some reasoning why he pulled out, and there's no real discussion as of yet on why that really happened there. Or is it more consistent with the second truism, will the Nobel Peace Prize be awarded to Netanyahu, as we hear Netanyahu claims credit for overthrowing Assad? You've got to listen to how this is all playing out. If he actually takes credit for it, then he is in control of those people that took over Syria as well. But he takes and claims credit for overthrowing Assad. I don't think he did a darn thing. And I could think maybe the United States of America, all the people of the United States should maybe stand up to claim that, right? Do you really want to, though? Israeli Prime Minister has hailed the jihadist takeover of Syria as a historic day in the Middle East. And I'm going to have to say it is. I believe it is. Again, he can say some truths here, but it doesn't mean that his claim is true at all. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has claimed that the fall of Bashar Assad's government in Syria is a direct result of Israel's military campaign against Hezbollah and Iran. And again, it was a direct result, and the government of Syria really handed it over. It was agreed, and the prime minister was seen on video, and they're doing all that they could to make the transition very peaceful, and so to limit, I guess, the bloodshed. But, you know, we're dealing with terrorists, and they're continuing kill people. They're just killing them outright, hunting them down and killing them, hanging them, and whatever they're also shooting them up. Very disturbing. Just not... let's stop right there. It's just nonsense. It's certainly not brotherly love, okay? Let's just put it that right there. So how is this that true here that he's Netanyahu's work when it was Turkey that allowed foreign terrorists to invade, and Netanyahu admits it was those jihadist terrorists that directly took over Syria? I'm not sure how Russia will take Erdogan's slight and Ottoman Empire resurrection expansion and Sultan aspirations as against Russia's interests here. But likely it's not going to be too good from Russia eventually, as it's very tenuous there. It has been. And, or if you will, to study, given their historic tenuous centuries old rivalries, the rivalry that, such as evidence in the Russo-Turkish wars. And there's a view that says this is somewhat coming back because, there's a mosque that has to be returned to the Christians. Hagia Sophia, I think it is. But at any rate, that's kind of in the future coming. But if we read that carefully, this issue and this report, notice the U.S.-supported terrorists did only take over Syria, not in the regard here of run over or take down, but that it was handed to them directly by Assad to now run the Syrian government. The Syrian army actually stood down. Whether that was due to payoffs to the high-ranking army officials, it would be raw speculation right now. Even till now, I can't quite see. There was a lot of strife inside. Nevertheless, the army stood down, and Assad's last order as president being that the handover of the running of the Syrian government be peaceful is really a testament to what he was up to and doing. And there's no doubt Israel's continuing violation of international law, that Satan Yehu's war crimes contributed to this mostly NATO and ally invasion through outlaw terrorists. And of course, the war crime theft by the U.S. and Trump of stealing the Syrian oil, not Israel, let alone Satan Yehu, which Trump denied the U.S. having any hand in, and to let this play out right moments before, that Satan Yehu takes credit for now. The war crimes and other international law violations here aside, American soldiers are worth what then, relative to protecting that oil and stealing that oil? Moreover, the U.S. and European nations condemn Russia's liberation of Donbas and Crimea, crying about territorial integrity, but they applauded Satan Yehu for the military attack on Syrian territory, invading Syria in the handover, and during while it's happened and after. As well, in one of the largest offensive operations in the history of the U.S. Israeli Air Force, the Israeli Air Force has attacked more than 250 military targets in Syria since the change of power in the country, including military bases, dozens of fighter jets and helicopters, anti-aircraft missile systems, and warehouses with missiles and other weapons, Israeli Army Radio reported, and since there's been pictures. But there's not a peep from the West in Israel doing so. That's what they're doing directly. From the outset, Assad's government maintained that the jihadist ranks were swelled by large numbers of foreign fighters, while the Russian Foreign Ministry claimed that the terrorists had received training from Ukrainian military intelligence. And I want you to make a big connection between the two places. The greater Israel may actually be Ukraine as well, as they return home, the real home, they think, they claim. While it is unclear whether al-Jilani coordinated with the U.S. and Israel prior to the assault, former U.S. Special Representative for Syria Engagement James Jeffrey described HTS in 2021 as, quote, an asset, close quote, of Washington, while Jilani himself has insisted that his fight is not with the West, but with Assad and Iran. And remember, in 2012, Jake Sullivan, then an aide to Hillary Clinton, Al-Qaeda is on our side in Syria. So HTS and Al-CIA, duh, are U.S. assets, not Satan Yehu's. So this is a historic event in the Middle East, there's no doubt, but it's not a license for Satan Yehu to make any such claim that he'd done it. Because there's so much more at play in all of this as well. Moreover, if Satan Yehu did not exist, this handover would be an historic one still, that will likely ensure the region is destabilized, at least until the terrorists cut their Western leash, actually unifying all of the Syrian people to act in actually their own best interest. Which, in the immediate, appears really doubtful to me. Maybe you have a different look at this. But to quote, we love Israel, and we were never its enemies, a jihadist fighter from Idlib told Israel's Khan broadcaster last week. Israel isn't hostile to those who are not hostile toward it. We don't hate you. We love you very much, the militant said. So these jihadists love genocide. At least interesting, don't you think? On that statement alone, and by that. In the meantime, Palestine will suffer further genocidal attacks as the Greater Israel Project continues, which Greater Israel Project, it seems, has already subdued the United States of America as well. Yeah, there you go again, thinking I'm only talking about over there. Well, what is done over there is being done to you here, whether or not that insight is in your cognitive warfare manipulated scripted brain box perception yet. This is a bigger issue going on in the world, much more evil, much more comprehensive, much more beyond, I think, what most people can actually handle. And I think it's even, not that I couldn't if I knew, but there's so many more pieces that you get just glimpses of that are out there, that are playing. And what are we agreeing to when supporting Satan Yehu and his Zionist political movement? Anyway, what is certain, we can see, as the report comes out, death feels imminent for nearly all children in Gaza. A new study of the children living through the Israeli war in the Gaza Strip found that 96% of them feel that their death is imminent, and almost half want to die as a result of the trauma they have been through. And remember, the people, the Zionist Federation Movement authorities, have said there's no innocence in Gaza, not even these children. This report lays bare that Gaza is one of the most horrifying places in the world to be a child, Helen Patterson's chief executive of War Child UK said. Alongside the leveling of hospitals, schools, and homes, a trail of psychological destruction has caused wounds unseen, but so no less destructive on children who hold no responsibility for this war, she added. Children having no responsibility. And how can they really, folks? Innocent victims, the next generations of Palestinians, subjected to genocide. With Trump's enthusiastic support, no less, with the support of the U.S. Knesset in Washington, D.C., and all the other genocidal psychopaths that don't say no or do something having the power to do so. Quote, children have witnessed the bombing of their homes and schools, experiences the loss of the loved ones, of their loved ones, and have been displaced or separated from their families, fleeing for safety, it added. An estimated 17,000 children in Gaza are unaccompanied, separated from their parents, although the study notes the real number may be much higher. Quote, being separated from their families places these children at a heightened risk of exploitation, abuse, and other serious violations of their rights, the report warned. The sense of being doomed has become a pervasive almost in all the children. 96% felt their death was imminent, and 49% actually wished to die, a feeling that was much more prevalent among boys, 72%, than girls, at 26%. Now, the article goes on and on discussing the problems if you want to read it. What more do I need to say here? Unless, of course, if you're not interested in the U.S. government killing and exploiting children through a genocidal murder, or that you don't think it's not doing the same thing at home, I guess it doesn't interest you. But look at the news, folks. It's just a reflection, a bad and terrible reflection. And so I've told you on and on, years and years, Gaza is an open-air prison, as is America, and the inhabitants of America don't understand that. In true to form and substance, Saint Yehu steals more land under the fraud of security and setting conditions for the permanence of the theft without a shred of authority and exploiting someone else's weaknesses while causing that weakness. These really are master classes in psychopathy and master work. With so much money pulled in from so many countries doing all the planning to pull this off. IDF to control buffer zone on Syria border until possible to enforce the deal. Listen very carefully to this impossibility. The Israeli Defense Forces, IDF, will temporarily control the buffer zone on the Syrian border. I'm pausing here. You've got to listen to what they're saying, how they set up this situation. But it did more and more than any other border nation which went to the border with their security forces, and every other nation held short within their own border, but not Israel. The statement specified that this move is necessary for security purposes until a force appears that will ensure the implementation of the 1974 disengagement agreement. So this war criminal ordered in an historic attack of Syria after the handover with the hundreds of bombings, Saint Yehu is taking out the air defense systems in Syria, clearing the way for Israel to attack Iran, the last country on his bingo card. Saint Yehu destroyed the military capacity of Syria to defend itself in the following days, and continuing now, assuring his unilateral imposition would never be met. Like, what force is going to appear to enforce the 1974 disengagement agreement, or as if the Zionist regime actually honored it? The Zionista territorial invasion committed without authority is by the West called security, that at the same time, Russia's lawful incursion into Ukraine is called an aggression, is the reason no force will exist making St. Yves claim a violation of international law that the West only recognizes for Russia, but not itself, St. Yehu, or the illegal belligerent occupying Zionist Federation political movement either. Quote, Israel will not allow jihadist groups to fill this vacuum and pose a threat to Israeli settlements in the Golan Heights in a style of the October 7th attacks. This is why Israeli forces entered the buffer zone and took control of strategic locations near the Israeli border, the statement said. But those jihadists were just acknowledged as being doing a great work by Satan Yehu. Why would they attack Israel? The militants said, we love Israel. Well, who are they? Apparently everyone's going to be Jewish here soon, whether by imposition or death, leaving only those that agree with Jew, with Israel, with Zionists. What does this deceptive destroyer mean here? Israel will not allow jihadists groups to fill this vacuum. He used Zio jihadist terrorists to create the vacuum that now needs to be filled. Then taking a strategic position without the buffer zone is a military taking of that territory. It's forbidden by international law. If we are to continue to believe such a thing exists with these folks, everybody else needs to follow it, not them. And before anyone answered too quickly or flippantly, that we don't need no stinking international law. The Constitution for the United States is based on international law. And I'll remind you what I've told you for many times on the broadcast over years. The Supreme Court stated in Kansas versus Colorado in 1907, because Kansas and Colorado are states sovereign and independent in local matters, the relations between them depend in any respect upon principles of international law. The international law is no alien in this tribunal. That was declared by Justice Gray in the Paquette Habana case, and you can see get the link to cite that at the case of Kansas versus Colorado in 1907. They also went on to say, quote, international law is a part of our law. It must be ascertained and administered by the courts of justice of appropriate jurisdiction as often as questions of right depending upon it are duly presented for their determination, sitting, as it were, as an international as well as domestic tribunal. We apply federal law, state law, and international law as the exigencies of the particular case demand. And you hear me referring to international law. These are just norms. No, I shouldn't say just, but they are just norms of conduct. But they are international law nonetheless, and they are a part of the United States of America. There is no distinction and separation. The documents are written by it. That means when you see the United States government not adhering to international law out there, not honoring its obligations and duties to stop crimes against people for their rights, or protects against territorial or governmental usurpation in any of its seven characteristics in the name of the local jurisdiction made, you can expect to enjoy none of that at home. And if you look very carefully, you don't. That is why Israeli forces entered the buffer zone and took control of strategic locations near the Israeli border. The deployment is temporary until a force committed to the 1974 agreement emerges and security at our borders is guaranteed, the statement says. But Israel, if it were legitimate, wouldn't have the needed to do any more than bring its troops up to, but not beyond, the border. If that agreement were legitimate, because Israel was legitimate, it wouldn't need to preface the condition of the future recognition of the agreement. And if it was an actual nation and not a trespassing illegal belligerent occupier, it would not have created the condition in Syria it now exploits through proxy terrorists, is us. Nor would it be able to unilaterally dictate the terms, especially such as the inane, irrational, and degenerate demand the trespass is temporary until our border is guaranteed. Our nation of people and the border of our nation of people has been guaranteed for all the history of mankind, said no nation established in the history of mankind, is the words of a psychopath and a psychopathic people. In which condition makes the land theft permanent, contrary to international law. look, I was going to start up the next tab, folks. Witness what you're witnessing. Don't look away. Observe everything you're watching right now. Probably, it's really unprecedented what we're watching and what we're watching be allowed. And I know maybe one of my listener, me and anybody else listening, may not have the power in our own. We can speak out though. We don't have that international power. And that's where we're looking. Those that have the power also have the duty and obligation. And they're not wielding it. Watch how this works. Watch how this is all being allowed. It's just, it's horrendous actually. It's a terrible, terrible stain on mankind. What's going on right now. And what is the legality for the U.S. presence in Syria? We'll shift our focus a little bit. The one that's paying the bill. The one that Trump oversaw to keep the troops there to steal Syrian oil. The question was asked, has U.S. military presence in Syria ever been legal? Now, if this answers for U.S., this will answer for every other nation that wasn't invited. Coming from the Pentagon Press Secretary Sabrina Singh, she failed to explain under what legal authority, either international or national, the U.S. maintains a force in Syria. Is its presence legal? According to Singh's reasoning, the U.S. has had a troop presence in Syria for a number of years and continues to operate within the Syrian Democratic Forces to ensure the enduring defeat of ISIS. Now, ISIS just took over Syria. What? Anyway, it was found out that is us, Israel, U.S., fighters, militants, terrorists, outlawed in the United States, outlawed just about everywhere. And is us, and is Israel and United States sponsored extensions of al-Qaeda. And in September 2014, the United States intervened in Syria under the pretext of fighting ISIS. The first American ground troops started to enter in Syria in 2015, recruiting and training Kurdish and Arab fighters. There was the invasion from Turkey as well. We noticed it 2014. It's the same time that the coup in Ukraine was fomented and killed people in Maidan to take over Ukraine. However, there was no legal basis for the U.S. conducting a military operation in Syria. The U.S. did not have a UN Security Council sanction for the intervention, nor was it invited by the legitimate Syrian government. The U.S. invasion of Syria was also illegal from the U.S. constitutional standpoint, argued the U.S. legal scholars. Then President Barack Obama did not get congressional authorization for the intervention. The authorization for use of military force, those AUMFs I've been talking about for years, remember that the loud extrajudicial killing and all that stuff, the murder memo way back in 2010 or so, 2011, 12, 13, on and on and on. That was passed after the 9/11 terror attack was equivalent to congressional authorization for U.S. forces in the serious hostility, they said. But it was not. They only said that. But it was not the equivalent of a congressional authorization. In addition to conducting airstrikes, the U.S. has been increasingly in military presence and establishing bases, violating Syrian sovereignty and international laws. Remember, we go directly to the territorial integrity point, is what the United States and the West is trying to nail Russia for. And Russia's saying, but you're missing the very first article, which says that you're supposed to be protecting the people in their self-determination, in their language, in their culture, in what they want to do, how they want to do it. And you're missing that for territorial integrity claim. But you think we're breaching. We're at first step. But you are moving at the second step. And you violate that very provision. As they're doing in Syria. It's very consistent when you read this through. In addition to conducting airstrikes, the U.S. has had increasing its military presence and establishing bases violating Syrian sovereignty and international law. As I said, the territorial integrity thing is out right there. Russia has repeatedly highlighted the American military units are present on Syrian territory without any legal justification. The reporter's questions indicate that there are concerns in the U.S. about the legality of its military presence in Syria, and I took that last paragraph as another high sign for we the people, for those in my listenership who understand what I've been saying. You can't remain silent. Freedom is not a spectator sport. your voice does matter. It does, doesn't seem like a lot, but it starts to make, it starts to turn the tide. We see some of that coming out. Instead of going with these pom-pom cheerleaders, with these particular celebrity politicians and causes, start standing in that law and don't give up, because if you give up, you've reduced your, you have no basis to act. But ultimately, we've heard whether or not they'll give it to you, the Supreme Court does recognize international law. And you see how much international law I reference when I'm speaking to things and looking for the principles that underpin the foundations of this country, starting the Constitution, which is part of that. Part of that foundation as well. The founding fathers, so-called, knew about that. They applied those principles. Why are we abandoning them? That's why I said learn to read to get to black and white and stay right on top of it. In fact, I'm working with somebody giving some mentorship to somebody in Colorado. All this starts coming back up. It's amazing how crucial it is to understand it. And reading the statute laws that were put in, what people will say, oh, they're just statute laws. Yeah, that's how the occupier speaks. But they are consistent with the organic law. And what you find is the law is consistent. It's the occupier members that are inconsistent. But that's what the problem in that case is going to be. And so it's very, very difficult to, everyone wants to know where the Republic is. I say, it's right there in the black and white. Start sticking to it. And then you start sticking it to whoever's misbehaving. And it becomes very difficult for them. Anyway, they're very interesting, these things. These are all a list of points how illegal it is the United States is there. If they can't make it right, then Syria has been invaded by violation of international law. Israel is invading. They have no right to do what they have, even with those agreements, if they're true. And I'll just tell you that agreement in 74, to me, is extortion and coercion. I don't think those are legitimate whatsoever. What do I know behind the woodshed? You can read those things and make up the, again, you go by title and who has right, who's proved it, who hasn't, and just the largesse that's been given to a certain group of people that are using what they call are Jews, people of the faith of Judaism, as their pawns. And it's, that whole thing is just terrible. I don't know what to say. How many adjectives do you put on crime? Psychopathy. And then people allow it, generally. So, on all these lists, we have, as Trump here also had no authority in Syria, or to commit at a warp speed bioweapon attack against we the people, or the rest of the world. He has no authority to launch a strike against Iran. Iran is now in the news. They want to now interfere with Iran's nuclear power. There's no authority for any of it. And Trump's need to steal its oil is not going to be an excuse, nor is helping Netanyahu to do so with Israeli jets. There's no authority for any of it. But remember, just trust the plan, right? You lawless lunatics. I just don't get this. Again, it's again the black and white. Just settle down in the foundation. And we can get a nice, clear picture of what should be going on, at least, and not. And I suggest, why don't we just start doing what the black and white says first, and then we'll figure out what else might be needed on top of that. And while I'm calling otherwise good people unmitigated lawless lunatics in supporting lawlessness and immorality for a demonstrable cause I believe I'm promoting here, I'd like to find out that somebody, a bunch of you, hit those donate buttons and donate a coffee or more at the Real Liberty Media. Donate right now. I'm asking you, donate right now. Donate. Don't worry about missing anything that I might be saying in the next few minutes. There's an archive all, they're all over the place. I as I look around, like a bit shoot as I put out. Put up a thumbs up somewhere that you're listening. Give sort of appreciation for what's going on. Do I need to ask, first of all, but I'm not doing it really for me. There's a lot of hard work going on behind the scenes right now to keep anything going. The website transfer is coming along. We had to move it a bit quicker than planned with the types of hacks we're going and getting and the HeistGator host obstructions that were going on. I hope some of you might, I hope you saw it, but I hope you didn't get any affected too much by it. And you'll notice that the pages now go to a place that says it's under construction, and you'll see some scaffolding and tarps and some sawdust instead of what we wanted to be able to present all at once. Also, WordPress is not being nice at all either. So a lot of work's going on to get this thing pulled together. I'm hopefully be able to get my head wrapped around what the new posting thing will be. I'm fighting an access thing on my end to try and get in all the time as well. But once we get this thing squared away, it'll go back to normal as far as we're concerned, and you'll see a lot better presentation on your end. So donate to finish things up on us and get this thing going along. Donate to keep this expansion going on as well. Remember, you can be a content syndicator or a provider. And hopefully we'll get back to a real decent network. We'll actually have a timing schedule. So I try to, even though we don't have that right now, I try to come back at noon o'clock Pacific on Sunday all the time. I've been trying to hold that, and I have been, and it's been real difficult. In fact, today was a very difficult one. I didn't know if I was going to be able to get this thing out, but here we are. We're going to keep plugging. It's a battle. The forces seem to be against us. But you think Israel taking just a foreign country's air defenses to strike a third country on the list of countries Netanyahu needs to extirpate to bring about the Greater Israel Project, and highlighting Trump's hypocrisy to his own professed Protestant Christian faith, in part that he has no power to determine a Jew, that power is reserved to God, right there in the Holy Book, as I've mentioned a couple of times, and otherwise his immorality on a number of levels, or evils, if you please, as well. This is a condition he caused when he backed out of the prior nuclear deal, as we move into the object of Netanyahu's ire, for no good reason. Trump's considering a direct attack on Iran. I'm hoping you tie all together what I told you about his ear, Nick, and how this will play out, and we're right here. This happened quick. The U.S. could join Israel to strike Iranian nuclear sites, sources have told the newspaper. And a transition team of United States President-elect Donald Trump is considering options for targeting Iran, including a direct attack on its nuclear facilities, sources have told the Wall Street Journal, on condition of anonymity. During his first presidential term from 2017 to 2021, Trump pulled out of the 2015 multilateral nuclear deal, which was intended to make it harder for Iran to obtain nuclear weapon and wage what he called a maximum pressure campaign. Trump's aides are now discussing a maximum pressure 2.0 strategy, which could include direct military action, the newspaper reported on Friday. Quote, Trump's aides and confidants supporting military options for his second term said the main idea would be to support Israel's strikes on Iranian facilities like Natanz, Fardow, and Isfahan, and even potentially have the U.S. participate in joint operations. Now, remember, right now, these are all nuclear power facilities, and they're nuclear research facilities for nuclear power. So this is what you're taking out in these people, if you try to do that. The Times of Israel reported this week that the Netanyahu government is preparing strikes against Iranian nuclear facilities. So, yeah, look where those maximum pressure 1.0 got them, though, like all those sanctions. See, but it got them to here, where they deceptively wanted to be, right, Netanyahu? To give a self-delusional license to go bomb people in foreign lands and resources you want to steal. Right, Lindsay? Ukraine is ripe for the theft, Graham? Like Trump did in Syria, stealing their oil, and proud of it. These war criminals, folks. It's just international law applied. Where'd they come from all of a sudden in the world? All these places to be influential, actually making these decisions. This is not a maximum pressure any more than committing a direct undeclared war contrary to law against innocent people at warp speed is. See, diplomacy is not in a psychopath's toolkit, and law is a minor detail, if it exists at all, to just us injustice. So due process is out the window. And we can rely on the presumption of guilt without any evidence, you see. Trump is understood to have told Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in a recent phone call that he does not want Iran to go nuclear on his watch. Tehran denies that it wants to achieve nuclear capability, but has stockpiled a significant amount of highly enriched uranium in retaliation to Trump's sabotage of the nuclear deal. So apparently Trump doesn't trust Iran's stated intention because he doesn't trust his own. In other words, Trump killed the prior nuclear deal because it took away the ability to go bomb, 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 bomb Iran. Right, McCain? And that is what wasn't good for Israel or United States. And that deal wasn't good for the United States. Not the deal that it was insufficient to monitor Iran to do the same, but less destructive effect. And that's what Satan Yehu was. The Times of Israel reported this week that the Satan Yehu government is preparing to strike against Israel nuclear facilities. The sites are highly fortified, so it's not clear whether the Israeli military could inflict sufficient damage with the conventional weapons in its arsenal. Listen very carefully, with the conventional weapons in its arsenal. The U.S. could provide heavy bombers and bunker busters for such an operation. There's others. So I guess these deranged psychopaths think that with Syria air defenses out of the way, which I don't think they were ever used to interfere with Israeli strikes on Iran anyway, if it did, to no apparent consequence, that this is the, they think that this is maybe going to be a cakewalk for them, to go walk in the park, or that Iran doesn't have a non-nuclear hypersonic doomsday response like Russia to an existential threat. That's the response at hypersonic, no, not just ludicrous speed, but unstoppable speed. And let's consider the more insidious opposite, that Iran has lied, that it already possesses the nuclear weapons. If so, the purpose to keep Iran from becoming a nuclear power on my watch is thwarted. The excuse is no longer valid. Satan Yehu is a liar, and the impressionable ear Nick Trump is too late. Even the promotion Iran doesn't have the bomb to allow it, if that is any lawful license, the excuse to attack is a lie. And those Iranian nuclear weapons are available to respond to any area only 60 mile wide over there in Israel, and mostly desert, with a few known places targeting Israel's nuclear capacity. There's only about 7 million people there. Iran has about 90 million people. So tit for tat, Israel won't take long to take out Israel if this goes there anyway. So this does not look pretty. It means nuclear war. When they're not talking conventional means, they're talking nuclear. And there's no good reason to attack, even if Iran lied. And if lawful presumptions rule and Iran isn't lying, Iran is not nuclear capable, but then we have the idea that we're getting help from a nuclear capable Russia. And a nuclear capable Russia is not helping Iran, like the U.S. is not helping Ukraine. What then? And if Iran isn't lying, an innocent nation is attacked, whether or not one likes Iran. And if so, that might be very prey on Judaism Zionist, but it isn't very peacemaker Christian-like. Right, Protestant Trump? And for all you official condemning or decrying Israel's extensive violations in Syria that I've been watching and hearing in the news, keep the crying in your beer. Having the international duty and obligation and power to stop the lawless invasion and occupation and destruction, you are part of the problem here. You're providing an unwarrantable license to nuclear war and continued genocide. So keep quiet, folks. Have them keep quiet to us. Don't notice. Keep your head down. And this is where this looks like it's going. I certainly hope not. This is BTWRLM 607. And we now look at the gift that keeps on taking. Talking about taking. Talking about theft. More Canadians choosing medical-assisted death. The government report reveals another double-digit increase in choice of euthanasia option. Euthanasia continues to represent a growing proportion of the mortality rate in Canada, accounting for nearly one in every 20 deaths in the country last year, the latest government figures show. According to the Health in Kanukistan's annual Medical Assistance in Dying, MAID report, released on Wednesday 15,343 people were euthanized in the country in 2023, an all-time high. 15,000 people. While the number represents an increase of 15.8% over 2022, it registers a drop from an average annual growth rate of 31%, the report noted. While the growth rate has declined, it still reveals another double-digit increase in Kanakistanians opting to end their lives under the country's national suicide law. It is, quote, not yet possible to make a reliable conclusion about whether or not these findings represent a stabilization of growth rates over the long term, the MAID report added. Federal statistics show the growth in cases of assisted death, making up 4.7% of the deaths in 2023 compared to 4.1% the previous year. More than 95% of euthanasia cases involve people who are terminally ill with cancer, cited as the most common reason for the request. The average age of someone seeking assisted death is over 77. Quote, an increased awareness of MAID within the care continuum, population aging, and the associated patterns of illness or disease, personal beliefs, and societal acceptance, as well as the availability of practitioners who provide MAID, may all influence the rate of provisions, the report noted. So listen very carefully. Social acceptance here. And it's so acceptable, I think we'll expand it, they go on to say. Medical assisted death in Kanakistan is only legal for people on the basis of physical health condition. However, the government is reportedly considering allowing persons with Alzheimer's and dementia to request their deaths before the worst effects of such illness set in. In February, the government delayed the controversial plan to allow assisted dying for the mentally ill until at least 2027 to allow the country's health care services to properly prepare. What that is anybody's guess, except if it's on the agenda, and it sounds like it is, we can kind of know what they're preparing for and how. Medical professionals express concerns that they are not yet adequately trained to determine whether someone with a mental illness qualifies for euthanasia. Canadian Health Minister Mark Holland said at the time, the government accepts the equivalency of mental suffering and physical suffering, but that it is a question of readiness. In 2021, Kanakistan loosened its euthanasia laws to no longer require that a patient's condition be terminal, allowing people whose condition is serious and incurable to request the option. The number of medical-assisted deaths in Canada has risen significantly since it was first introduced, from roughly 1,000 in 2016 to more than 15,000 last year. And when the government licensees are prepared and a bureaucrat or AI bureaucrat deems your wrongthink is a terminal illness causing physical suffering, maybe even of another, like the hate speech laws in the UK when others are offended. Yeah, this is such a good idea. This game show, Culling for Gaia. Let's make it global. In recent years, a number of other countries have introduced assisted dying laws, including Austria, Australia, and Spain. The UK recently passed legislation on the issue, though the vote in the House of Commons was not the final say. And someone that isn't going to put up with the U.S. theft, though I guess willing to accept taking your own life, and possibly when they decide your wrongthink is hurtful. Canadian province vows to retaliate if Washington hikes tariffs. Premier Doug Ford warns Ontario would cut power to the country's southern neighbor if President-elect Donald Trump makes good on his threats. I have to say, I read this stuff and you just watch how sanctions really work. Eat your own, eat your neighbor, just whatever. Anyway, so peaceful, so kumbaya. The head of Ontario, Doug Ford, has warned that the Canadian province could stop supplying electricity to the United States if President-elect Donald Trump follows through on his threats to impose sweeping tariffs on Canadian products. which, remember, also, these tariffs are going to cost you at home much more. And remember, if the tariff is the start of it, then there's going to be the additions of what it costs to move that thing along in Congress. The Republican has vowed to impose a 25% tariff on all goods coming from Mexico and Canada unless the neighboring nations stem the flow of illegal immigrants and drugs into the U.S. Speaking to reporters following a virtual meeting with other provincial and territorial leaders as well as Prime Minister Justin Trudeau on Wednesday, Ford said, quote, "We will go to the full extent depending how far this goes. We will go to the extent of cutting off their energy, going down to Michigan, going down to New York State, and over to Wisconsin." The official added that he did not want this to happen, but my number one job is to protect Ontario, Ontarians, and Kanukistinians as a whole. The Associated Press has quoted a spokeswoman for Ford, Grace Lee, as noting that the Ontario powered 1.5 million households in the U.S. last year and is a major exporter of electricity to Michigan, Minnesota, and New York. According to the media outlet's estimates, some 85% of U.S. electricity imports come from the North. I thought this was a quaint response. I'm going to understand. Not sure he should cut all the power at once, though. Maybe they should match the tariffs plus 10% with a 25% tariff. Let's see, Ontario would cut off the power for, let's see, eight hours a day. Ontario's choice of when during the day. So we the people could get the acclimatized change to austerity and third world nation status parity. How do people charge their Teslas now, though, when I think about that? This sounds pretty interesting as I were thinking this through. Let the tariff hunger games begin. Popcorn and tequila, anyone? Oh, wait. Appearing on NBC News, Meet the Press on Sunday, Trump doubled down on his threats. Quote, "We're subsidizing Canada to the tune of $100 billion a year. We're subsidizing Mexico for almost $300 billion. We shouldn't be. Why are we subsidizing these countries? If we're going to subsidize them, let them become a state," Trump charged. Now, that would actually solve the border invasion crisis, wouldn't it? Just move the borders. Right, Governor Trudeau? Why not? It's a much shorter distance to build the wall across Panama anyway. Cheaper labor, too, as I think about it. Such the art of the steal, right, Trump? What a deal. I mean, the U.S. only recognizes territorial borders when it suits it anyway, right? Regardless of international law, right, Satan Yehu? Talk about stealing what's nachos. And I hear it's a little chilly today than hot tamale. How you doing south of the border of the powerhouse Great Lakes State? We just might get to see this. Very interesting. All this little rattling going on. So the leaders of Kanukistan don't like being stolen from while the government steals from you, Kanukistinians, as I can find as a report all at the same time. Just the hypocrisy, one left and right, left and center. Feds adding models to firearms ban. Plan to donate confiscated guns to Ukraine. The Trudeau government announced yet another round of models will be added to its long gun ban, further prohibiting over 300 firearms that were not included in its sweeping ban introduced 4 years ago. Ministry of Public Safety Dominic LeBlanc said additionally 324 firearms will be added to the original list of 1,500 that were banned under Bill C-21 in 2020. Hindsight, folks, which passed through the Senate last year. These firearms can no longer be legally used, sold, or imported in Canada, LeBlanc told reporters Thursday. The added measures will also include donating some of the confiscated arms to Ukraine to aid the country in its fight against Russia. The Department of National Defense will begin working with the Canadian companies that have weapons that Ukraine needs and which are already eligible for assault firearm compensation programs in order to get these weapons out of Canada and into the hands of the Ukrainians, so they can, I guess, kill themselves, right? I mean, this is what that's all about. And you get to be left defenseless. Owners of the prohibited firearms have been granted an amnesty period until October 30th, 2025, and all newly added models will be rolled into the government's existing buyback program. While the government announced the phase one of the buyback program is officially underway, Not a single firearm has been confiscated to date, despite the program already costing taxpayers nearly $100 million. Good for you, folks. Additionally, new measures stemming from Bill C-21 include provisions that reduce the threshold for firearms licenses to be revoked from people who commit violent acts. This announcement comes on the 25th anniversary of the mass shooting of École Polytechnique in Montreal that killed 14 women, timing that some critics have of the ban view as political. Quote, this is clearly a political move. The liberals are desperate to change the channel from multi-billion-dollar scandals to keeping Canadians safe, Canadian Coalition Firearms Rights Executive Director Rod Giltaka from True North stated. They've done the complete opposite over the last 9 years. Second, this is a move is astoundingly cynical. The liberals know full well that they will confiscate zero firearms as they are out of time, and there is no doubt the conservative will form an indisputable majority government within 10 months. Giltaka pointed out that the firearm-related violence has increased by 116% over the last 9 years with no legislative effort to stem the violence, only a quadrupling down on destroying licensed firearm businesses, fish and game clubs, and licensed gun owners. So that's the wrong reason, isn't it? It should be Governor Trudeau is destroying the right of the people to self-determination, which is known in America as the right to alter and abolish the government, which is one of the rights you have underneath the UN law, international law, which Russia is pressing the United States to allow the people in Ukraine do. According to Giltaka, Friday's announcement has nothing to do with public safety. The debate on this is long over. Liberals, the NDP, and the Bloc, Québécois, consistently chose divide and conquer politics over the public safety, he said, after being devastated in the polls for over 2 years. We'll have to wait and see what path these people take. That's right, because the subjects of Kanukistan only have the rights and property they are gave, just like another occupied province in the open-air prison called the United States, the prisoners of which have the equal right to be subject to United States wrongful extortion of every kind and to no other, just like it says in 42 U.S.C. 1981, known as civil rights. If you think we actually separated from the crown. But speaking of a tariff on spirits, agave and otherwise, Pope Francis to open 5 sacred portals on Christmas Eve for a ritual that's never been done before. Pope Francis will commence a centuries-long Catholic tradition on Christmas Eve and introduce a first-time historical addition to the holy ritual. That's interesting. Centuries long. It's never been done before. Starting on December 24th, the pontiff will open a series of 5 holy doors throughout the Vatican, including St. Peter's Basilica, plus Rome's 3 other basilicas to commence next year's Catholic Church Jubilee, a joyful commemoration of faith that normally occurs every 25 years. The door at St. Peter's was sealed shut by a wall of bricks since the Jubilee Year of Divine Mercy in 2016, and on December 2nd, those were ripped down to ready the door for opening as part of the ritual recognition. After the Christmas Eve ritual, Pope Francis will open a symbolic door inside the Roman prison Rabibia on December 26th, the Feast of St. Stephen. It will be the first time a pope has opened a holy door at a prison, reported the Denver Catholic. And somehow, opening an evil prison portal for the first time in the history of the church doesn't seem right, do it? Why now? I mean, what if they got it AI erroneously wrong, Will Robinson, and the ceremonial portal isn't merely symbolic, or that it's cover for the faithful dupes? Now, I'm not hearing much of any debt being extinguished either in this 2025 Jubilee Year of Hope and Change, presumably. or condemnation of usury, which imprisons. Did you? During the 2025 Jubilee Year of Hope, Pope Francis is calling on governments worldwide to undertake initiatives to restore dignity to prisoners that, quote, go hand in hand with a concrete commitment to respect for law. So apparently, there is no respect for the laws across the world. I don't think you, my listener, are not in an open-air prisoner in your respective country. Quote, I propose the governments that during the Jubilee year take initiatives that restore hope, forms of amnesty or pardon that help people to regain confidence in themselves and in society, ways of reintegration into the community, the papal bull reads. It's a proposal, folks, as a papal bull no less. Has anyone read the papal bulls from about 2012-13 to around the 1800s regarding England and the United States and the Pope, Vatican? In particular, the one, the Holy See responds to the King of England, lamenting the Magna Carta after the King John's gift of all of England. The Vatican responding, in essence, your agreement with them does not affect our agreement with you. And I'll let you all do that study for yourself. It's very important that you see all of that. Very hard to find the information on that. Find it nevertheless. Talk about an evil portal opener. Wow. But hopium for the masses. Jubilee year now. See if you can regain hope, you prisoner. You won't resist your captivity just as the occupier wants it, so you will integrate there into their community as well with that. You have to have that hope to do that. The global community. Unity, remember? Inclusivity. No one left behind with no property because you are property and the ward of the state, the father, with wrongful exactions of every kind and to no other, equally your civil rights. Read it again, 42 U.S.C. 1981. Do you think the Pope has nothing on this? Well, remember the Socialist United States Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, the amendment in 1954. You know, where under God is interjected between nation and indivisible, the reordered God indivisible pertaining to the Holy See. Read those documents, folks. You'll see that. The Holy God indivisible. Look for it. The heathen Americans adulterating that statement by placing a comma between God and indivisible to sound like one nation under God, indivisible, instead of one nation under God, indivisible, as the Knights of Columbus would have intended, and to hide the fact in plain sight, and which is consistent with historic documents. God, indivisible, means the Holy See. Right there in plain sight. Where have we heard that before? Brilliant amendment, right out in the open, don't you think? I guess it's all where you put the emphasis, I suppose. No separation of church and state there. No divisibility under the flag is your pledge. Old honest Abe Lincoln saw to that, remember, despite the right reserved to the people to alter or abolish the government, as apparently only if you can, or the right of self-determination. Right, Russia? One nation under God indivisible. We're such stupid people. I'll get you back to your dungeon portal. Jubilee is over. Hopium springs eternal. Quote, in the Jubilee year, we are called to be tangible signs of hope for so many brothers and sisters who live in conditions of hardship. Fisichella told journalists on Monday, directly quoting Pope Francis' May 9th bull of indignation, spes non confundit. Hope does not disappoint. Hope does not disappoint whom, actually? It wouldn't disappoint those hoping you smoke opium instead of taking responsibility to protect yourself from the trappings of the world and its deceivers, that's for sure. That's why their hope doesn't disappoint them. People do. With fallen nature, almost like we can't help it. And speaking of world-class deceivers, the Pope advocated jabs, didn't he? Right? Yes, he did. The fallible one said those jabs, they were an act of love, a moral obligation to trespass against them. Yes, he did. Menstrual abnormalities strongly associated with proximity to COVID-19 vaccinated individuals. International Bureau of Vaccine Theory, Practice, and Research. In spring of 2021, My Cycle Story SM launched a secure online survey to which 92.3% of 6,049 respondents self-reported menstrual irregularities occurring after the rollout of the COVID-19 injectables. Each respondent served as her own control because prior to the rollout of COVID-19 vaccination, the vast majority had regular menstrual cycles. And as I was reading that, I was wondering, was there anybody in this that wasn't a woman? That's all I'll stop. Don't need to answer that. A subgroup of 3,390 respondents were only indirectly exposed to COVID-19 vaccines or the SARS-CoV-2 virus. This subgroup reported 1, being unvaccinated for COVID-19, 2, having no COVID-19 symptoms, and 3, no positive tests for COVID-19, yet a substantial majority of these women who were only indirectly exposed to COVID-19 injectables or COVID-19 infections still had many of the same menstrual abnormalities as the 2,659 women who were directly exposed to a tested positive of COVID-19. Understand the frailties of this in acknowledging a test, but nevertheless, these are just reports from women in proximity to someone who has the injectable. And understand, if you've been listening to me all these years, we talked about all this proximity problem. And remember, the first one was the technicians coming home to a woman that was of age of being able to conceive a child, and they said, don't do that. You're going to have to protect yourself. The mean age of the entire cohort was 37, 8 plus or minus 0.01 years. The percentage of the indirectly exposed participants who reported being within 6 feet of the COVID-19 vaccinated person was 85.5%. Of these, 71.7% had irregular menstrual syndrome symptoms. It's a syndrome now. Menstrual symptoms within 1 week. I want you to, I'd pause it here, go back and think about some of these other effects that happened and the timing. This becomes important. I read some other reports about this timing. Here it's kind of confirming these, but a little more detail. 71.7% had irregular menstrual symptoms within 1 week. 50.1% had irregular menstrual symptoms within 3 days after exposure. Think about that. That blew me away. This is quite astonishing to me. The speed from exposure, 3 days to begin causing irregular menstrual symptoms, from exposure to targeted bleeding or other complications. It's just a stunner for me. It's quite a body shift and change going on right there in 3 days. 50%. And I'm saying some of this because of some people I've heard who got vaccinated, and they had irregular menstrual symptoms. Was that clear, that fast? And so I saw this and I thought, okay, well, this is just reporting on what women who did get the jab and had the problem. And now we're looking at the shedding problem. We're looking at, somehow this is getting out amongst people that have proximity within 6 feet. And remember when they used that number too, and what I was talking about that number about. When comparing daily proximity to a vaccinated person, the categories of daily within 6 feet outside of the household versus symptoms sometimes daily outside 6 feet had the highest relative risk at 1.34 p less than 0.01. for heavier menstrual bleeding, earlier menses at more than 7 days earlier and early with a relative risk of 1.28. The extended bleeding for more than 7 days with relative risk at 1.26. Indirect exposure to COVID-19 vaccinated persons was significantly associated with the likelihood of the onset of menstrual irregularities. This study provides additional data to complement a growing body of evidence raising concerns regarding the safety of mRNA vaccines. I don't know what more to say. What do you say? This is coming through the whole time we were talking about it. I told you these reports and studies would finally come out. Here they are. The problem I have consistently here is the testing, actually. So just running on their symptoms is astonishing. And then we can know it was predictable. And then, as I think this through, if you are one of those people, just the proximity, really look out on the internet. There's quite a few people with information on how you clear this thing out if you're still having adverse effects by it. And I've heard some stories that they're still going on. And so this is a long-term, we'll talk about lung COVID. Yeah, this is an interesting problem. In particular, you didn't even have to get jabbed. Now, what's the vector? I really don't know. Is it shedding? Is it aerosols? Is it why they told us to stay 6 feet away? As I said, it's probably what they're keeping them. They're telling you to stay away from these people that got injected. I said that. Is it more the theory, as I suggested, that this was a venom? That this was like the condition of the beekeeper and his wife who cleaned his clothes after he did beekeeping, that got stung by the bees, and she hung them up in the room, in the laundry room, and she got exposed to the venom that was from the clothing? Was that the vector? Is that what's going on here? I don't know. What I'm saying is that there's evidence now, proximity to an mRNA injectable is infectious. The very thing I told you that it would be. And so, caution. I don't know how you go around. We were kind of joking a bit. You know, you're going to have to explain to me whether you've been injected or not. This is a real, very real threat now. What do we do as a society? I told you these are serious things to consider. This is not something that's going to go away. This is a bioweapon. It had a purpose. It had a gain of function purpose. These were very important subject matters to inform yourself about. And I'm sitting here a bit stunned. I've read it before. I'm reading it now, and I'm still stunned. There's so much. There's more to read in this as well, this report. But I'm not here to be the doctor, the expert, none of that. I'm here to inform you. And what that was, again, you stay when you know there's a danger, you learn to stay away. Sometimes these official dangers may be obvious in certain instances and not so much in others. That's what I was explaining in the Operation Hindsight 2020 when I started talking about this threat in 2019. And I was told, and I don't remember what the broadcasts I do, vaguely, if you will, just I don't remember when and how. I was told by people who were keeping track, and partly because of YouTube taking out the information, that I was speaking about these things, this particular to the flu, as early as December there, and a month in November, right before. And that's to only say, pay attention to the news. It's out there to show you there's a future. That is a future coming. And you don't want to be wrapped up in it, but you also don't want to disregard it just for the sake of contrarian, as I've said. You want to understand it so that you can respond. And the easiest response here, and it's coming again, still, and I've seen some adjustments, so be careful though, on the adjustments to the so-called pandemic, and I've given you the answer about why it can't be a pandemic within a local jurisdiction, and the definition for that, and what it takes to be a pandemic, that you stay within your communicable disease law. Now the problem with this one is it's apparently communicable, and there's no way to tell. You just start having irregular menstrual symptoms. And that's the one they're talking about. That's the one they looked at here. Remember the VARS, the database that they started hiding as well. so many other symptoms. You know, the more sensational, maybe not wrong to me, died suddenly stuff. The brain hemorrhaging things. That kind of thing we're looking at. Is this people walking near someone else, and within 3 days, 4 days, they come down with this ailment, and it takes them out? Pretty astonishing. Absolutely astonishing. So, as I said, when that starts to happen, that'll freak people out. And think about that for yourself. Right now, we're having to think. I'm talking about it. Think about that. How are you going to protect yourself? You have a comorbidity that this thing attaches to. You get either shedded, you either get sprayed on, they cough, you walk through the mist of somebody's sneeze, or you just around their clothes every day, and it's on them, and you pick it up like the wife of a beekeeper's venom, and you go into anaphylactic shock. In this case, you go through menstrual irregularities, you go through heart, blood clots, whatever. All that list, hundreds of things. Very serious problem. I don't even know how do you start to approach the problem. Anyway, here's your report. Get it if you must. I would ask you to get it. Research so you see the black and white that this is an actual report. It's not me just talking. It's not a sensational thing. It has prior proof, and this is coming back to confirm that. And we're subject to all these. Our society is now weakened at some point by it. And this is not the only thing. Anybody who's doing any looking around can see the clues that they're starting up all this stuff again. If we didn't take lessons from Satan Yehu and the United States government and how they use other proxies to commit war against people, I don't know what else more to say. And that's the other thing. I don't really push too hard. I think hopefully people see it straight up. If they're going to use proxies anywhere, they're going to use proxies against you. What are those? Well, I don't know. That's the problem. We don't know. So, anyway, this very serious condition, I don't wish this on anybody. It's going to be a surprise, and I suspect start to work prophylactically, and I don't know. I'm not going to suggest that you, well, certainly look into it. I'm not going to suggest any one thing can help you, but don't underestimate these things like the ivermectin, the hydroxychloroquine, the various nutrients that were out there that our body doesn't see, and don't underestimate that these things that they are now, you can collect as a proximity, don't cause a dysfunction in your system that depletes you in certain nutrition that then allows it to be taking hold. Well, I suppose that's going to take a long more than 3 days. 3 days, is just astonishing. You go from effect, it's almost not quite as fast as an allergy. Not quite as fast as a reaction as an allergy is just mind-blowing. But within 3 days, you are now responding. Your body is now damaged. And so, it's not just to this issue. I think there's others. And I've been saying all along, pay attention, listen around, and maybe start making your own data set to put together in order to start keeping track of what is and what isn't. I mean, like this one that's coming down, they're now reporting something in Africa, the Congo. It's saying it's not really malaria, but it looks like malaria. And this is what I'm saying. It looks like something's piggybacking on those, especially children. They've had malaria before. They're finding out it's riding on the back of those that had malaria before. And this is what I talked about as well. They give you something, you go through it, but now that's weakened your body and makes it receptive to something else later. That binary, trinary weapon. I'm not trying to fear you. I'm explaining a dynamic, a condition. Not sensationalism. It's something to be completely aware about and not be afraid either. I think that if your body is fortified and you pay attention to what your body's signals are, you'll get all lost over it. You figure out what's going on and you start to solve it. I think if you put your body in a state of health, it can respond a lot better. And when you try to respond to anything that comes on top of that, it responds easier and you're able to deal with it quicker. In a way, I do that when I get feels like a cold. I always know there's something in my nose and it stings really bad. it's not just like smoke. It's a very intense thing, and it gets worse and it gets worse. Well, I've learned if I jump on that, start doing, if you will, echinacea, double up on anything I'm taking as supplements, I do and spray my nose with either a peroxide or the iodine spray, provodone, I can take care of that within a day. It does not linger more than a couple days. If I wait, it turns into a cold that may last a week. Just a common head cold type thing. And so there's, I don't know what it is. I just know that I know when it's there. And I don't wait. And so this is the kind of thing. You try to keep your body as up as possible, health-wise and responsive. And when it responds, you help. You jump in and you roll your sleeves up and do what you need to do. Ginger tea, whatever. Whatever you find for yourself works. Because that's what's going on here. I don't know what you do for irregular menstrual bleeding. Because we were said, we were told in this study, it was attacking the reproductive organs of both men and women. See, men don't have the outward effect that women do in this regard either. Now, I suspect a greater problem, actually. So, I'm just getting really thoughtful about this is a serious problem. I'm worried about it, if you will, like worry that thing. Here it is. And it's not something that's so simple to direct, but we each have our ability. And we can decide and choose to be our most helpful, if you will. And that would include internal spiritual help, if you will. The I don't want to say positive attitude, but keeping that positive attitude, keeping that the fact that you're not helpless to it, even though it's a serious and it's silent, you know, it's stealthy. We have our ability to do that. Anyway, so I'm going to, I think I'll end here. Donate to the broadcast. Donate to Sound Minds. Just a coffee. Lots of you, if you could. I've been told the broadcast is going to be getting probably within Sunday night. Over 500,000 views since the last month. So Sound is doing a ton of work to get the word out. And hopefully we'll have more words coming. And we need some support behind the scenes in order to keep this up, built up. And a lot more work's going into it. As you know, you try to plan something efficiently and get it done, but a lot more work starts to happen. And that's been being covered. So if you would, donate to Sound through, Ko-fi, let's say K-O-F-I, or donate button in PayPal. I'd appreciate it. I think, and I know they will. Again, this is to try and bring Grimmer's idea along, move it into the next stage. And move it into places, like I said, literally uncensorable, unstoppable. And part of it's going to be you helping, you know, not money. Set up an account. Start syndicating the information. Eventually become part of a whole bunch of things that can be chosen by people. We don't choose it for people. They choose it for themselves. This is what I'm saying. You choose for yourself the directions, the answers, the things you want to do. And that is what dictates what goes on. I'll be with you next week. Tech Tips, or nature willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, piercing free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, lessons to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Hal's words ignite.
Freedom Saints. Join us next week. Heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.